Welcome to Soundtracks. During the next hour, we're going to take you on a journey, not just along this road, but throughout history.
Set your speedometer at 50, or follow slower speeds posted along the road. At 3 points during the tape, we'll give you a chance to catch up or lower your speed to keep pace with the tour.
Look in the printed guide for the 3 locations. You'll hear this music. And we'll tell you where you should be.
This road, Route 550, has had many names. It used to be 50A. Before that, it was Intercounty Highway 157. And even earlier, it was simply the State Road. It's been here with one name or another, in almost the same place since the early 1800s.
Many of the towns and communities we'll pass through have been here that long, too. Often by looking at the placement of the building style, and even the landscaping, you can learn a lot about the history of a place. Take that tall evergreen up ahead on the left by the White House.
That's the blue spruce there. But that's an old one, see? It's been there for a long time.
Hubert Wilhelm is Professor Emeritus of Geography from Ohio University. He is a noted authority on the rural landscape and settlement patterns here.
Farmers especially would plant conifers in this area. And there were early traders that came across the hills, Appalachians, singularly selling saplings of Norway spruce and blue spruce, because these old Europeans didn't identify with a hardwood forest.
Many early farmers settled along this route. But by the late 1800s, farming had given way to another industry that has ever since been linked with Appalachia, coal mining. This community, Sugar Creek, was once a booming coal town. In the early 1900s, this road was lined with hundreds of company houses.
There was a lot of them. I'm gonna put it at 200, and I think that would be light.
Oliver Riley knows the history of Sugar Creek well. His father was a miner here, and Oliver himself lived here for over 40 years in one of the houses built by the company.
They had some three-room houses. This is a four-room. This used to be a house right over here, three down below us, and just everywhere. You could just see houses on the other side of the road, houses.
In this area, the little pyramidal house, for some reason, and it has never been investigated, became very, very popular. You see it all over Nelsonville, you see it all through that coal mining area. Now these little pyramidal here are definitely late 19th century. They have this little Victorian dormer on it, you know, kind of a little style feature, rather than simply being a box with a pyramidal roof on it. A little styling at times. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
A miner was leaving his home for his work when he heard...
Sugar Creek was part of the Hocking Valley coal field, one of the first coal fields in Ohio to be developed. As early as 1850, coal was being mined in the Hocking Valley. From 1899 to 1906, Athens County led the state in the production of coal, and in 1918 and 1920, nearly 7 million tons of coal were produced in Athens County. Here in Sugar Creek, there were four mines, 209, 210, 211, and 212. Oliver Riley's father worked in one of them.
For dreams have so often come true. Daddy,
my daddy,
please don't go away. I never could live without you.
He worked here at 210 mine. But I was a very small child when he took me down the shaft in the mine here at 210 mine. And I kept after him to go down in the mine. He took me down, they call it the cage, the elevator. And I went down there. And I had to stay all day. That was a big thing. Unless it was an emergency, they wouldn't bring you back out. So I stayed as near as I can recollect all day. And I was ready to go home. Didn't want no more of it.
This hill, Dividing Ridge, marks the end of Sugar Creek. It also divides the two main watersheds in the county, Sunday Creek to the west and Federal Creek to the east.
They named it Federal Creek because his old soldiers, still patriotic, counted 13 tributaries on that stream, and they called it Federal Creek.
Anthony Sargenti of Amesville has studied the history of the area. These rolling hills, he says, were home to some of the earliest settlers in the region.
The first settlers were people who came from Connecticut, Massachusetts, who were Revolutionary War veterans, who bought the land from the Ohio Land Company with the scrip that the government paid the soldiers at the end of that war.
Settling the area was no easy task. Clearings had to be cut from the primeval forest to grow crops and build homes. Early Ames settlers spoke of killing 12 to 14 deer and sometimes 3 or 4 bears a day. But within 10 years, the area was settled. By 1802, the first school was started. By 1804, the county had mustered a militia. The frontier was passing. Dr. Wilhelm.
This is a great place. It tells the whole story. That's a full classical eye house. It's quite early. It's quite early.
The eye house got its name because it is so common in the eye states, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa. We also find it here in Ohio.
These houses were built virtually throughout the 1800s because it was a standard farmhouse. It replaced very often, of course, the log cabin, which set up a little bit the hollow because when settlers first came into areas, places like this were very much in danger of flooding. And they would move their place a little bit uphill. Now, there was another factor involved, and that was availability of water. And the springs are a little bit farther back, okay? So the combination of being away from flooding plus near a spring, they put their log cabin, you know, a few hundred yards back. And if you go up these hollows, very often you will find an old log cabin because that's where the family first lived.
In 1807, General John Brown was one of the first tax collectors in Ames Township. He wrote of the difficulty he sometimes encountered in collecting taxes on those early farms.
In 1807, I was elected lister of Ames Township. In discharging that duty, I learned how hard it is to levy taxes so as to give satisfaction to all. At that time, the tax on all horses 3 years old in April preceding was 40 cents, and on all cattle 3 years old, 10 cents. That great difficulty was to settle as to age. One old woman I found fully posted. I had looked about the place and found that they did work with 2 yoke of cattle, but the woman said these were late calves, would be 3 years old during the summer. There were several cows evidently giving milk, but somehow none but the bell cow is old enough for me. Out of the lot of 3 or 4 horses, only one was 3 years old. I quizzed the old lady about the singularity of nearly all the colts and calves in the settlement coming after April. Ah, she said, you're a single man and young yet, but you will learn that Providence arranges these things. That was the clincher, and I left.
One of the things these early taxes were used for was road building.
Well, the road was built always at the break of the slope. You have the valley here, and then see where the slope changes? Okay, so the road is out immediately out of flooding. Now, when the people saw that happening, then they would come down.
The next farm is a good example of an early homestead.
The barn is a what is called an Appalachian loft barn. southern barn. And you have a salt block house, and this is one of the early ones, very early ones. I think it's a heavy beam construction, and it has a full classical facade. But otherwise, you know, a good example of a salt box.
In this part of Ohio, you can see many different regional influences from New England, Pennsylvania, and the southern states. For when the Northwest Territory was open for settlement, this area was one of the first that people came into. These pioneers have left their imprint in their houses, barns, churches, and even their landscaping.
These conical-shaped evergreens on your left are one of those imprints. They don't grow here naturally.
Cedars require limestone or calcareous or limey conditions underneath the ground. They're a good ecological indicator. Wherever that's pretty limey, they will do well. So you find them not in this area so much, you find them particularly in southwestern and western abandoned fields and so on, along fence lines.
The hill ahead with the tall cedar trees is a cemetery, the Amesville Cemetery. The history of the area can be traced by reading the old tombstones there. It's also the original site of the village of Amesville. But back then it had another name, Mudsock.
Mudsock Cemetery. In the early days, you usually had some Swedish-smelling cedar boughs that would suppress the odor. The cedar in America particularly is sort of a substitute in a way for the European fir trees. It constitutes a very important tree in the traditional funeral system and in the cemeteries.
On the next farm, Highview Farm, the house is a beautiful example of an architectural style known as Gothic cottage.
This town, Amesville, is one of the oldest towns in Athens County, settled primarily by Revolutionary War veterans from New England and others who bought land from the Ohio Company. The town had one of the first schools in the area. Although it was but a small pioneer community, the first two teachers were graduates of Harvard. Amesville has also made its place in the history books as the location of the first library in the Northwest Territory. The Western Library Association, or as it is commonly called, the Coonskin Library.
These settlers were pretty smart fellows, too. Many of them not only had been soldiers in the Revolutionary War, but they were also scholars. They liked to read, and they had no books. There not a library in sight, but they decided that what they should do, could do, would be to trap animals, get the furs, bale the furs, send one of their members east, and trade the furs for books. And that's exactly what they did.
At one point, these rolling hills were dotted with thriving family farms. One of the most prosperous was the Henry family farm. In this 1963 interview, 104-year-old Carlos Henry talks about how it all began.
I don't know whether you know about my grandfather or not. He was an Irishman. He came from Ireland in 98, was it? When he came here, there was just a cabin where this east room of this house, above where this east room of this house stands now, and about 3 acres cleared. That's all that was cleared when he bought this place.
But every spring, at sugar making time, they'd come out here and make syrup and sugar for their supply of sugar and molasses to live on. Then, but he virtually bought this whole section, piece at a time, and some besides.
You should be at the intersection of Routes 550 and 329. When you get there, go on to the next track.